We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 111, the first show of 2017. Scott, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Did you do anything awesome?
I did.
Did you ring in the New Year with a bang?
I did. I rang in the New Year asleep for the first time I can remember.
Really?
Yes. The girlfriend and I went up to Vermont to go skiing, and we had a long day of skiing, a long day of traveling, and by 11 p.m. I was like, you know what? Screw this. I don't even need to stay up. And I went to bed. And it sucks because I missed Mariah Carey's complete meltdown.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah,
that was the most entertaining thing, was the Mariah Carey just train wreck.
Yep.
It was so much fun to watch live and then go to Twitter and just read for like an hour.
I woke up
every Twitter comedian out there.
I woke up at like 7 a.m. the next day to go skiing, and because no one's up at 7 a.m. on New Year's Day, Twitter was dead except for Mariah Carey memes.
Yeah. No, it was very entertaining, I gotta say. So I did, my wife and I sat home and acted old and did not, I was designing t-shirts, to tell you the damn truth.
Were you up at midnight though? Because if so,
I stayed awake. I was drinking alone and
white wine
and designing. No, this was beer, which is very shocking because usually when I drink beer, I'm out. Like, I can't slowly drink beer. I have to, if I'm around a bunch of people, I can drink it continuously. But if I'm by myself and I have like 3 to 4 beers, I'm falling asleep. It's over. But for whatever reason, I was intrigued. I was, you know, very excited about my new t-shirt that I was designing and putting out there, Chase for 28, and then started getting on Instagram and Twitter a little bit. And then Mariah Carey absolutely woke me up, because that was by far the most entertaining thing all night. I mean, it was fun to watch. And everything I hear about her is that she's just an asshole to everybody. Like, she's awful behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So it seemed like everybody was just like, okay, we're just going to let this go a little bit longer.
Lip syncing malfunctions is one of my favorite things in the entire world. It doesn't get any better than watching someone's face turn when they realize that the track is still going and their lips are not moving.
The high pitch Mariah Carey, like where she's known for going really, really high, all fake. So now I don't believe in it at all. I really don't think she can sing anymore. I think it's gone. I think she's lost it. She got too cocky to practice.
She's her better days are behind her.
Oh no,
I'm just
going to
leave it at that.
Yes.
Mariah Carey, like 1994, was some primo stuff. Like right before she started dating Derek Jeter.
Yeah. No, that's, the voice was phenomenal. She was phenomenal at that point. Jeter hit it at the prime. I mean, look,
Jeter ruined.
This is what you need to know on like the barometer of when they peaked. If Jeter was dating you at that point, probably very close to the high point, right?
Absolutely.
Very close to the prime.
He's got a nose for that kind of greatness.
He's good. He's good like that. So yeah, Jeets.
Well, happy 2017. Happy New Year to all of our Bronx Pinstripe Show listeners out there. Hopefully you guys had a more exciting New Year's than I did. I had a great weekend. It was a fun time, but I did not do anything crazy. And for the longest time, I would go out to bars and you'd pay that $150 cover just so you could get that stupid ass champagne toast at midnight. And it was the dumbest thing in the entire world. And every year I would say, I'm not doing this next year. I'm not doing this next year. And then lo and behold, I would do it next year. But you know what? I finally
this
didn't do it
didn't.
Next year.
You got yourself a girl. You settled down a little bit, went skiing. I don't know. Things are happening. You're getting older. 30's like a blink away for you now.
I know.
Seems like you're close to it.
It feels like
you're close to it.
I'm a year and a half away.
Yeah. Yeah, you're getting closer to my life. It's pretty scary. I'm watching this unfold.
Yeah, but the great thing is that you're also getting older as I'm getting older.
I will always be that much older, yes. That will never stop.
So you teased it earlier, Chaser 28 in the fan shop. We got big plans for 2017 in the fan shop.
Yeah, this is something I'm very excited about. You know, last year was kind of like phase two, I guess, for it. And this year, phase three.
Phase two, Del Boca Vista.
Del Boca Vista, yeah. It's a beautiful piece of property. The phase three is exciting because there's now a lot of options for different things in the fan shop. We've basically stuck to t-shirts for the most part, and now I'm going to be putting a lot more shirts out, a lot more shirts. I'm working on probably 5 right now, and the cool thing about that is I could start doing sweatshirts now. I'm getting into some custom sweatshirts. I'm working with some shops that do like cut and sew, which are like straight sourcing fabric, getting the fabric and sewing and cutting like from scratch. So some really cool stuff that we're going to be rolling out there.
Are you making some organic t-shirts?
They're not organic. I can't say. I don't know where the fabric was manufactured. I cannot guarantee
t-shirts.
Yeah, I cannot guarantee it's like sweatshop free. That's not a guarantee, because it might be, very well might be. For you know, I got to keep my prices down. We're not obviously rolling in the bucks. But yeah, there's a lot more options now. We're gonna be doing a lot of hats too. That's the snapbacks.
The BP hat that I saw the mock-up of is sick, and I know you have one, and I'm waiting for mine, and yeah, you have not sent it to me yet.
Yeah, there's only one in existence. I'm wearing it right now.
One
actually.
Of one.
One of one. Yeah, it's a tough item to get. But yes, that's on the docket. That one's coming.
I think the first few members of Bronx Pinstripes at least deserves the BP hat. That's like how you know you're an OG.
And yeah, that's true. I mean, you have a polo. There's only 3 people that have a polo.
My brother had one.
My brother had one for the night, but I have that polo now. So there's only 3 people. I was like, you got to give that back. You know, you're just a cameraman for the night.
Yeah, but I'm excited for 2017 in the fan shop. And if you're a listener of the podcast, definitely go to the fan shop. We're going to be saying codes on air. So the only way you can get a discount is by listening to the show, and we'll give you a code for each week or each month. We haven't figured out exactly how we're going to do it yet, but we will give you a special code in the future that you can use and get a percent discount in the fan shop. So we definitely want to encourage the listeners of the show who are probably some of the more loyal Bronx Pinstripes readers and website followers to also get a discount on the fan shop, because as a thank you for listening to the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. It's probably going to be a weekly thing. I'm going to keep pumping out these shirts. If anybody ever has an idea, you know, we're always wide open for new ideas and cool stuff. This is all about the fans and you know, stuff that's really not being made right now. So I want to make sure that, you know, we get some unique stuff and some cool things. Gonna be hooking up with some players in the near future as well. Hopefully we can do some stuff with them. So yeah, a lot of fun things, a lot of exciting things on the horizon for that side of it. But yeah, I'm pumped up for 2017. This is probably the one year that I'm most excited for, honestly, in the past, as long as I can remember, honestly. I'm very excited for 2017. I feel like there's going to be a lot of very good things happening.
Absolutely. And speaking of the listeners, thank you guys for reaching our goal and exceeding our goal of 150 ratings and 100 reviews. We exceeded that by about 5 on each, and it's great. We're quickly climbing the charts. We're the number one podcast if you search in Yankees and iTunes, and that is awesome. We can see the stats behind the scenes. We know the podcast is growing, and that's great. So I definitely want to just again thank you guys for doing that. And if you have not gone and reviewed the show yet, please do. It takes 2 seconds. Give it a 5-star review or give it an honest review. Even if you have any criticisms of ours, we're open to criticism and making the show better. We want to make the best show possible. Like Scott, this one person is criticizing you. Juke of URL says, these two are passionate and opinionated, bona fide New York Yankees fans, even if one of them has trouble doing live reads. And I think they're talking about you.
As you stumbled saying that, yeah. It was definitely talking about me. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad they keyed on that. That was a very, very keen observation.
That's how you know that they're a loyal listener.
No doubt. These are things that we need to work on, because if we are to get advertisers on the show, which is a goal of ours eventually, is to get some people who want to pay some money to get their products rung on our show, we have to be able to read what they're selling. So yeah, that's something we need to work on. Absolutely. That's also part of 2017 resolution.
Just because I'm maybe not the best live reader, it doesn't make you the best live reader either.
It makes me the best of the two of us, which is pretty good.
Maybe.
I'm just, yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah. You want to, we could make this into a competition.
How would we even do that?
I don't know. They people can rate us. How about that? We could have a whole separate section of them rating us as readers.
Yes, please go to iTunes and write in the review who you think is a better live reader.
I'm obviously a 12 out of 10.
We decided that we will be attending Yankee Spring Training this year, March 24th, 25th, and 26th, because it is the one and only weekend that the Yankees have three home games. So that is going to be a kick-ass weekend down in Tampa.
Yeah, I'm pumped up for that one. We got our place straightened out. We're gonna be staying in Tampa down by what's it called? Seminole Heights in that area, which is really close to the stadium and around some breweries and things like that. So we're gonna set up. We haven't figured out what we're gonna do yet, but I know Andrew and I have been talking about setting up at least one event, if not more, for the time that we'll be down there. You know, for us to go out to a bar, get some drinks and hang out. It'll be fun. You know, if you're going down, try to do that weekend. It's first of all, it's the best weekend to go because it's three home games, so it just makes the most sense. And yeah, obviously there's extra incentives. We can hang out. There could be more. We'll set up like a Yankee fan meetup. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
It's definitely the best weekend to go because of the three games, but also it's later in spring training, so you know the starters will be playing 4 or 5 innings maybe.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's like knee deep in all of the battles for any position. If we're looking at, you know, potentially a position battle for left field, right field, maybe third base if your dreams come true. You know, you never know. There's a lot of things that can happen at that point.
I'm also looking forward to it because I feel like last year it was you and me's first experience down there, at least my first. Maybe did you go as a kid? I forget.
I'm going to date myself. I was at Yankee Spring Training when they were at Fort Lauderdale.
Which is what, like 81?
No, come on. I'm
I know.
That old.
I know.
It was early 90s, yeah. So it was because I used to go to Vero Beach and the Yankees were in Fort Lauderdale and they would play the Dodgers.
But you and I kind of figured out the lay of the land down there this time around. So I think this coming spring we will have a little we know where to go, what to do. So I think it'll be awesome.
Yeah, I agree. Your buddy who lives down there was a big help. I think that kind of told us what neighborhoods were what, where all the bars were, where things were. And now that I'm looking at a map, I recognize things. So it's definitely a positive.
And party at Jeter's house afterwards, right?
Yeah, what was the island? Davis Island. Remember, we had no idea. They're like, oh, yeah, Davis Island. We're like, I have no idea what you're saying right now. I don't know where that is. Is that in Tampa? Is that in Florida? Yes.
It's St. Pete.
It's dead in the center of Tampa. Oh, so, yeah.
Okay. See, I don't even remember. Any New Year's resolutions for 2017? Either Yankees or non-Yankees related. We want to know what is Scott Reinen's New Year's resolutions.
So the Yankees New Year's resolution, I do have one, and it has to do with Joe Girardi. I'm going to be taking more of a back seat on criticizing Girardi this year, I think.
Whoa.
Yeah, news flash.
That's bad news for the podcast.
Well, I'm sure you'll change that soon.
I guess I need to double
This is just a resolution. It's not something that's entrenched yet.
Under April 2nd when Scott breaks that.
Well, let me give you my reasons why I'm saying this. Okay? Because I think this year is, and you know, we've talked about this. This is exactly what Girardi wants. This is where he thrives. He thrives when the young guys are around and working with young guys and putting them in positions to succeed. I think you'll see that he's a lot better with the young guys rather than the veterans. I really could tell towards the end of last year and with all the shenanigans that were going on off the field and with the media, Girardi was just getting frustrated. I mean, you could see it all over his face. He was getting annoyed by the questions, annoyed because of the situations that he was put in, because of the veterans. And he just, you know, it's just not the place where he thrives, and that's not where he does good things. So I think now that he's got, you know, guys that he can mold, guys that he can really manage and put in positions, I think there needs to be some patience, because at the same time, while he's doing that, he's going to be figuring these things out, and he's going to have to, you know, work a little bit, you know, here, work a little bit there, and see how a guy reacts in certain ways. So I think it's going to be a learning experience for him to learn the players, because there's so many new players that are going to be playing in 2017 on the pro team. I can't be as critical because I think there needs to be patience.
So I totally understand what you're saying. I think what you're saying is that you and I and a lot of fans have been begging the Yankees to go through a youth movement rebuild, retool, whatever you want to call it. And they finally did it. this year. And now we can't then jump down, attack them anytime they underperform, because we have to remember, these are kids. They're going to go through struggles. This is right. what we wanted, because we know 2018, 2019, 2020 and on is going to be even better, because that's how you build dynasties. You don't build dynasties through free agency. You do it through young players in your farm system. And right. we've got that in 2017. So we can't then attack them for underperforming when this is what we asked for.
Well, and it's not only just that. It's not only you build through the young players, but you build when the young players succeed. So we have to make sure that and give Girardi that little bit of leash so that he can put those guys in those positions, because it may not be the right position, you know, come opening day. So, it may take half a season. It may take an entire season for him to figure out who does what well, when, how, and then, you know, make them put them in the best position at that point. So it's going to take time.
But what about the annoying bullpen decisions that you know he's going to make when he brings right. in Richard Blyer in a key situation in the seventh inning just because he doesn't want to use Betances until the eighth inning?
See, those are different. Those to me are just like long-standing Girardi headaches, and that to me has nothing to do with what we're talking about. What we're talking about is the youth movement and finding these key positions for these guys to succeed. That, what you're saying, is just stubbornness and utter ridiculousness. So what I'm hoping is that he gets trendy and goes Andrew Miller style and starts using Betances in the innings, and then we're going to praise him, and then there's going to be a different story altogether, because Joe Girardi is learning on the job and adapting and being flexible and everything we need him to be as a manager, and also teaching these young kids. So I'm confident. I'm optimistic on Girardi this year.
No, you're going in with a positive spin on Girardi, and I love that. That's good. That's probably good for your health. Better than
what very
I'm
good
going
for my
through.
Health. I have to make sure that I'm very positive, extremely positive, waiting for you to come at me. So I have to like build it up.
Well, I think what you're talking about more is that, do you remember when it was the 2015 season when Slade Heathcott had that game-winning homer against Tampa,
yes.
and then sat the next week, and
yes.
and it was in the middle of a Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury classic slump, and we're saying, hey, why not play the kid that just won you a ball game? You'll get mad at that kind of crap.
Yeah, well, that drives me nuts, because you have a kid who's coming off. I mean, he had a huge game. Like, let's ride that momentum, and then it just got shut down. It was shut down immediately. But I mean, Slade Heathcott was never really in the future, the long term plans.
But it's still it's
a type of thing.
It's
yeah.
type of it's those type of reading your team scenarios where just because the binder says you need to play Jacoby Ellsbury against a righty, or Brett Gardner today because Slade Heathcott played yesterday, or fill in Mason Williams, it might be Mason Williams this year, doesn't mean you have to follow it. You can change things up and let these kids take you where they will. Let's see what they've got. We already know what the veterans have. Let's see what the kids have.
One thing it would be very interesting, actually, to talk to a Florida Marlins fan for back when Girardi was managing that team when they had a really young team, and to see how he did things.
Those are going to be hard to find.
Yeah, I know. You have to really dig deep for those guys. But yeah, that would be an interesting conversation to see if his managing style was different when he had a bunch of young dudes rather than a bunch of veterans. So I don't know. I hope it is. I really do. And from everything we know about him and how he does thrive with those kids, I got to believe it is different. He tweaks it.
Yeah, that's kind of the, like you said, the reputation he had with the Marlins, right? Is mm-hmm. working well with the young players, so he's got a young roster next year, amazingly young roster. If you look at some of the depth chart, and this kind of goes in well into our one of our Yankee topics today, is looking at this depth chart, position player depth chart so far. We know we got Gary Sanchez, Austin Romine at catcher, two young players. We've got Greg Bird and Tyler Austin at first base. Two young players, Starlin Castro and Torres. Castro, he's young, but he's a veteran, but he's still 27 years old. Third base, Headley and Torres. Headley's the veteran there. Shortstop, Didi and Torres. You're seeing a trend there with the backup middle infielder of Torres. But Didi, again, he's veteran, but he's still a young player. Gardner and Mason Williams is the depth chart out in left field. Ellsbury and Aaron Hicks in center field. And then Aaron Judge, Hicks in right field. And then Matt Holliday, obviously the DH. And you got Tyler Austin, Ref Snyder, Torreyes, Mason Williams. Name your utility player that might come up from Scranton. So I guess it's just a long way of saying that you think of the Yankees as an old team, but very quickly, even their major league roster has kind of turned over to being young.
It's extremely young. I mean, there's really, I mean, Ellsbury and Holliday are probably the oldest. And Gardner, I guess those are the three oldest guys on the team.
Yeah, Gardy and Ells are the same age.
Yeah, so Matt Holliday being the elder statesman by, what, 5 years, 4 years?
Yeah, but
so
kind of, I mean, he's old, but he's a one-year DH option. I'm not really worried about that.
No. I mean, we're talking about 2017, though. That's, I mean, I'm not, I'm just talking about numbers at this point.
Yeah,
what is he, 36, 37?
He cranks up the average age.
Yeah, but it's not much because he's only one dude at the top. Whereas before we had a whole bunch of guys out there, but yeah, it's exciting. And then you never know. There's going to be battles for those second guys. I mean, like Romine had a good year last year. He had a very good year, but there's catchers in the system now that are playing well and hot on the heels. So you never know. I mean, look at last year when John Ryan Murphy got traded for Aaron Hicks. That was kind of out of the blue, right? I mean, it was a surprise when it happened, and the reason being was because, you know, we knew that there was catching depth in the system. There's still catching depth.
We liked John Ryan Murphy, but
yeah, but we also liked that move. I liked that move. It was a good move. I thought at the time.
Yeah, at the time it was a good move on paper, but Cashman realized that he's got five John Ryan Murphys in the system,
right?
So they're expendable,
even for Aaron Hicks, for Jackie Bradley Jr.
But even though the roster is young, most of those positions are pretty much set in place. The only ones I really see possibly shifting before the season starts or if someone has a really bad spring is first base and right field.
Yeah, I think the utility jobs are for grabs too. I think Ref Snyder having a good spring is...
Yeah, I mean, the utility players, the 23rd, 24th, 25th guys on the roster obviously will change with whoever performs in spring and if there's any injuries. But as far as the starting job, we think Greg Bird is going to be the starter, and we think Aaron Judge is going to be the starter in right field. But those are the only two positions that I could even fathom changing before the season starts.
Yeah, everybody else is pretty much locked in, you know, obviously not barring a trade or some kind
exactly,
of roster
shift. Barring trades, but just talking about performance-related things going into the season.
Right. No, yeah, that's it. I mean, everybody has come out and practically said that right field is Aaron Judge's job. So, you know, nobody's saying that Aaron Hicks could battle him for that position. Everybody right now is saying that it's Judge's job, and, you know, they're going to be patient with him for at least a little while. So I think, you know, he's got a little bit of security in the sense that at least people are talking about the front office is saying that it's his job, which I guess is good for him, right? I mean, he's then... He only has to focus on getting better as a player and not really worrying about what's behind him.
100% up to him. We talked about it last week where it's all on his shoulders, but not in a bad way, in a good way, because I don't think there's going to be a ton of pressure on him to carry the team next year. That would be ridiculous. But as long as he performs, it's his job. Aaron Hicks will have to hit 1,000 in spring training to steal a job.
Right.
And obviously that won't happen.
Maybe throw 106 from right field.
Any of those positions concern you? Anything jump out where you're saying, I really wish the Yankees would add some more depth there?
Not really. I like where we are. I mean, even the utility spot, I think Torreyes proved a lot last year. I think he showed that he's a guy who can, you know, step in, add some offense. I mean, he was a guy who was one of the, you know, the better offensive players. You're not going to get home runs. You're not going to get a lot of power out of the guy, but he gets on base quite a bit. He's kind of a rascal on the base paths. And then, you know, I'm not going to say anything bad about Rob Refsnyder. I think everybody who listens here knows that. This is a guy I think can play in the major leagues. He's a pro hitter. I think he's got to prove more to the team that he can play defense because they'll never believe it. So he's got to show that so that he can be a true utility guy.
Let's talk about that because right now Torreyes is the only guy, backup infielder, that can play second or short. That doesn't concern you at all?
Well, no, because last year, if you remember, I mean, Starlin Castro can play short as well. So
okay, yes.
Going into the season, Castro was actually the backup shortstop.
You're right. But Torreyes is kind of filling a pretty big backup
void.
Spot.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. He's going to be playing in the infield. The nice thing about Ref Snyder is that he can also play the outfield, and that's his natural position. I mean, he's better at the outfield.
Well, I think we're learning that the Yankees don't trust him in the infield, unless it's maybe first base. But
Tyler Austin kind of stole that from him. Right, exactly. Tyler Austin is his biggest problem right now because of that. But Tyler Austin also plays outfield. Ref Snyder, I think that experiment
Austin,
at third base
Tyler
is what really
Austin
hurt him.
Did not play the outfield in the majors for them, did he, last year? Maybe one game in right field, but I'm pretty sure
he had some time out there, I believe. But, I mean, he's played in the minor leagues, and yeah, he can play the outfield.
He was primarily a first base, though, baseman for them last year.
And going into the season, he's going to be the backup first baseman and probably, you know, rotated depending on who's pitching at some points. Obviously, all depending on what Bird does. But I think going into the season, they're gonna make Tyler Austin a first baseman because of the fact that Ref Snyder is flexible for the outfield. Hicks is going to be in the outfield. Mason Williams is there. They have guys who can play the outfield. They don't really need him to play the outfield. They need him to play first base well and play a good, you know, pick up a good glove and be a good defensive first baseman if they need it.
Damn, wouldn't it be convenient if he could play third base?
Well, a lot of first basemen can go across the diamond and play third. It's happened before.
Yeah, if Miguel Cabrera can do it, then I'm pretty sure Tyler Austin can. Pretty sure Ref Snyder can in that case too.
Yeah, Ref Snyder was close to getting that third base, getting some more security until, like, do you remember the last game or last two games of spring training last year?
He booted like
took one off
four
the face,
balls.
He took one off the chest. I mean, he was just getting crushed. It was not a good ending of spring training for him at third base.
We're obviously going to get into the depth chart more as the season gets closer, but I just wanted to take a look at it from sort of like a bird's eye view right now. That's why the Yankees have been pretty quiet, is because most things are pretty much set. All right, next thing I want to talk about is Dellin Betances, and a little behind the scenes here is normally I put in the notes exactly what, or not exactly, but mostly what we're going to be talking about, and right now all I have in there is Dellin Betances, and Scott has no clue where I'm going with this.
Yeah, now I have no idea what you're about to say.
I think the Yankees should turn him back into a starter.
Okay. Okay. This is a starting point. Let's hear the reasonings.
Here's why. Obviously, he's not going to be the closer. That's Chapman's job. And I'm really losing faith in their ability or willingness to use him like Andrew Miller was used in the postseason, where he's the fireman. He might pitch in the fifth. He might pitch two innings, sixth and seventh, and then he's not used again for a couple days. I am just terrified Girardi's going to use him as a traditional eighth-inning pitcher. And he's better than that. He's a better pitcher than just an eighth-inning setup guy. He's filthy. He's probably the fifth-best reliever in baseball, and I don't want to waste him in the eighth inning. There's plenty of other guys, Tyler Clippard, Adam Warren. Name your middle reliever who can get you close to what Betances will give you for the eighth inning. I think he has more value if they try and make him a starter again. He was a starter his entire minor league career up until he came up to the Yankees in 2013. I think he could go back and do it again. There's been plenty of guys who have made the transition back. I see no reason why he can't do it.
I feel like you sprung this on me so I couldn't go to Baseball Reference and pull up some stats.
No, I got some baseball reference. What do you got? I got his major and minor league page up, and I also have got John Smoltz's page up because
John Smoltz, you found the convenient comparison?
He was a closer for four seasons and then went back and started for another five seasons. He pitched till he was 42 years old.
Okay, so when did he revert back? I mean, was it after he was a dominant starter in the major leagues and won a World Series?
I understand that. Yeah. But he was 38 years old and he went back and did it.
That doesn't matter. That means nothing.
He was 39 years old and made 35 starts. You're telling me 28-year-old Betances can't do it?
Nah,
bullshit.
See, I'm throwing this out because all you did was find one person that conveniently made your argument for whatever reason.
It's the one person.
And you also picked
a
Hall of Famer. You also picked a Hall of Famer, John Smoltz. Okay,
if Dellin Betances goes into the rotation and pitches 12 major league seasons at all-star caliber starter level, he'll be a Hall of Famer.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem. The problem is the reason Dellin Betances is a relief pitcher now is because he wasn't any good as a starter.
That's not true.
The end, this is, I'm going off of complete memory now, but because
okay,
I have
I'm
nothing.
I'm looking at his stats right now.
Because you threw this on me. So let's just talk. I'm going to talk off my head.
Okay.
What I remember, the problems with him was that he lost the strike zone. He was walking guys left and right. He could not throw strikes.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest problem for him as a starting pitcher. And we've seen that spur up. We've seen that rear its ugly head with Dellin Betances as a reliever. When he loses
when
his
he's
stuff,
exhausted,
when he loses...
When he's been used
okay, when he's exhausted. So now we're going to throw him into a starting job where he's going to be throwing multiple innings at a time.
Yep.
Not going to get exhausted. Because what I think happens is that this kid, when he's tired, whether it's one outing and five innings or three outings, one inning each, back to back to back, doesn't matter. He's tired. The arm gets tired.
Yeah.
Loses command.
It's
loses
the next
command.
Day that he's tired. It's not during that one performance.
Well, we don't know that because he hasn't done it in a major league game.
Obviously, he'd have to get his body readjusted to being a starter. He'd have to stretch out, stretch his arm out. He could do that this offseason. He started 25 games in 2011, and he had a 3.7 ERA. It's not fantastic.
Where was he?
He was in double
single,
double and triple A.
Double and triple. Look, the problem was the walks. I mean, that was the reason they made him into a reliever because he couldn't keep the strike zone. I mean, he had plenty of time. And he was part of the Killer Bees coming up. He was one of the starting pitchers that was going to be the guy, and he couldn't do it. They moved him to the and they don't do that very often.
He was young, though.
To bring them in.
He has more experience now. He has three All-Star caliber seasons under his belt as being a dominant reliever. He's got confidence. There's no reason he can't now have the mindset to go and be a starting pitcher.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know if it's not going to happen.
I know it's not going to happen, but
if I were Dellin Betances and this were an option for me, I would try because now
you make a million dollars a start as a mediocre starting pitcher.
you look at what his future is and the contract future for him now. He's stuck in the eighth inning. He's screwed. He's not going to get paid like a closer. And he is not a rotation guy.
Ivan Nova just signed like a $30 million contract.
Yeah. There's not really a precedent for him, you know, for his type of ability and then being stuck as a guy who's not a starter or not a reliever. So.
I just think about his struggles the last couple seasons, and it's not because of long extended single performances. It's because he's used multiple times and he gets tired that way. He gets tired when he reaches being used too much late in the season.
What about when guys are on base? Because he's a different pitcher when guys are on base too.
I mean,
and that's
going to
happen a lot more
as
a starting pitcher.
There would be an adjustment, but
ask John Lester about that adjustment. Sometimes it doesn't work.
John Lester just won the World Series.
Yeah, well, it didn't happen. He didn't throw over to first base. It had nothing to do with that.
Say Dellin Betances was turned into a starter, and he is a slightly above league average starting pitcher.
Let's just make Aroldis Chapman a starter too.
Okay.
I mean, while we're at it, let's just do that.
Dellin Betances as a slightly above league average starting pitcher is more valuable to the 2017 and 2018 Yankees than an eighth inning guy.
I would agree with that.
Okay.
I just don't think it's going to happen. Nor do I think that. Looking it back, if he is walking guys like he did in the minor leagues, it's not going to work. You just can't do it, and that is the reason they moved him.
Well, they just signed. They have a closer. We know who the closer is. Why not give it a shot?
Yeah. I mean, look, it's something. I think you should write Brian Cashman a letter. It's something, for sure. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you about that one. Yeah, it's something. It could be a positive move for the organization if they were to try to make a move like that and it were to work out. Because he has no value moving forward as an eighth inning guy, as a person, as a player.
As
he doesn't want to be in the as a person. He doesn't want to be in that position.
Hell no!
It's not a position he wants to be in.
I mean,
whether he says it or not.
I mean, he could still get paid closer money once he becomes a free agent, and he probably will. And it won't be the Yankees, but I just think that he could have a successful career as a starting pitcher, and I would love to see that.
It's going to be a problem, I think, when arbitration hits because he's not going to get the closer the numbers for
well, no, it's just if
closer.
If I mean it, arbitration though, or the qualifying offer is set at the top 150 players in the league, not arbitration. Yeah, but he'll get paid in arbitration, just not. Isn't he in arbitration right now?
I don't know.
But yeah, he's first arbitration eligible in 2017.
Well, so there you go.
He's been on $500,000 contracts the last 3 years.
My first point stands strong.
He should want to do it, and I think the Yankees should want to do it too.
But they're not going to, so.
Well, they should let me run the team.
Now, I'm all right with that. Let's do it. I got a job in the organization if you're running the team.
You'll be my official podcast host.
assistant to the traveling podcast host.
All right, let's talk about the Hall of Fame a little bit. There's been, so if you you can actually check what guys have been voted for based on whoever has submitted their ballot so far, both anonymous and who has made their ballots public, and 36.3% of people have already voted, so it's still a low amount.
I thought they were all going to be public for this next one. Aren't they? Isn't everybody public?
Starting 2018.
Oh, so it's not this next one.
Yeah, once the new CBA kicks in, which is next year.
They should be ahead of that trend, these guys. They should be ahead of the curve, grow some balls.
Anyway, some surprising stuff. Bonds and Clemens are getting 70%. They need 75% to get in, but Bonds only got like 52% last year, and Clemens like 58%. So that's a huge jump. Now, maybe you can say that the people who have already submitted are more on the cutting edge of voting. They're more with the trends. They discount the whole steroid stuff more than some more traditional voters. Who knows? But all I know is 70% is actually pretty high for those guys. They're on their fifth year of eligibility. Kind of leads me to believe that I think they might get in sooner rather than later.
Yeah, if they're that high, I heard that too. I was listening to a lot of MLB satellite radio, and they were talking about this quite a bit and talking about those numbers. For one, do we know the landscape of the voters? I mean, has it changed? I mean, this year, next year, are we seeing like a fall off? Is there a lot of new voters coming in?
Is there a lot of old dudes dying and some
dying or just not or not or just don't have a vote anymore because they're not writing any longer? I don't know. I don't even know how that works, but you know, because I think as soon as we start getting a much younger trend, a much younger group of writers, we're going to start seeing those steroid guys get in.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you make an argument, and some people say, well, we think Barry Bonds started doing steroids in 1999, and if you take his first years of his career up until 1998, he's a Hall of Famer without the last 8 years of his career. So,
yeah, so you get into such sticky territory when you're doing that.
Totally.
I was listening to so many of these conversations about this, and there and people like some of these older guys. I forget who I was listening to, the former GM of the Padres, Jim Bowden, is that his name? Anyway, I think he's on a Sirius Radio, and they were talking about, you know, how they vote and kind of like their own criteria. And I get it; every guy has their own criteria, and that's exactly why you should. That you should have your own criteria and why you vote. That's what it's for. But there's a certain guidelines where the Hall of Fame puts into play that you should take. You have to take into consideration for each player, and a lot of them are saying, well, you know, I know enough. I have what I believe is enough evidence to say that Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens did steroids, so I'm dismissing them. But I don't have enough information about guys like Piazza or Pudge or Bagwell or these guys. And because I don't have enough information on that and I don't have enough evidence, I'm going to put them into the non-category bucket. And then to me, that whole – because they're like, I can't assume. Well, you're already assuming now with Bonds and Clemens because nobody was ever convicted of anything. They never failed the test. But yet you're assuming that they're on there because of the evidence that you think is legitimate enough. And that's fine. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. But at the same time, everybody's assuming everything about everybody in that era. It doesn't stop. It's all gray. It's a problem.
I look at it if you played from 1985 until 2010, I'm assuming you did steroids.
But the problem, here's another problem. You're getting nailed now for PEDs, a PED violation, which everybody looks at a PED violation, they say steroids. But some of them is like Adderall, right?
And no, that's the NFL.
No, there's Adderall violations as well. That's why what's his face? Chris Davis had the prescription for Adderall and it got taken away from him and he got dinged. The 70s in baseball, in Major League Baseball, was riddled with greenies. Like in the 80s, riddled with greenies. Watch the Doc and Daryl about how Daryl Strawberry and Doc Gooden are talking about the amount of greenies that they took just to get them to the next bar drinking and then break them back up. I'm just saying, there's the amount of drugs and steroids and PEDs and all these things. It goes beyond even the steroid era. These guys were doing stuff before that. So it's all gray. I don't know where the line is. It's not even a clear line. It's very blurred, even when it started. And are we talking about just steroids? Because before that, we're talking about the uppers, the Adderalls, the greenies or whatever. So it's everybody's assuming too much.
And I agree.
There just needs to be an asterisk, or we just need to say, look, this is what it was. This was this era.
Yes.
This was this era.
Exactly.
This is this era. Who was the best guy?
Yes. We need to say who is the best guy of this era, and we're voting them in. And if you want to put on their plaque, they played during the steroid era, fine. I don't give a shit. But Bonds and Clemens were undoubtedly the two best players, two of the best players of that era. So they need to be in the Hall of Fame. And get out of here with this Jeff Bagwell nonsense. He's trending at 92%. Why does everyone love Jeff Bagwell so much? His stats are so prototypical steroids, and they're not even as good as other guys like Manny Ramirez or Gary Sheffield or go down the list of power hitters of the late 90s. They're not as good as Jeff Bagwell's not as good as them. And he's everyone's giving him love. I don't get it.
The thing that's driving me nuts is I'm looking forward already and seeing how this is trending and everybody talking about these gray areas and who does what and what the evidence is. And I'm already envisioning David Ortiz getting in the Hall of Fame and getting in like on the, I don't know, they don't do the first ballot because nobody, they'll probably hold him off of that because baseball writers will do that.
Because
and
DH.
Then they'll get him. And then they'll get him in on the second or third or whatever. And they won't be lumping in him with the rest of the guys that were steroid guys when he was clearly one of those guys. It's ridiculous. There's so many things contradicting each other when these guys are talking about this. It makes my head spin and it drives me nuts. They need to reshape the way the Hall of Fame is voted.
Or we just need to, I mean, does anyone really care about, say, the Football Hall of Fame?
No, I mean, I don't know. Maybe some people do.
Yeah, but
I don't really
but
care.
Not really. But people care about the Baseball Hall of Fame. It is a long tradition. People really think of it as a great honor. Maybe we just need to stop considering it that way.
What about this? Here's another little spin. So the steroid era. Everybody, obviously, we're talking about the guys who have been convicted and all these guys. Well, Bud Selig, who was in charge of baseball during the steroid era, is going into the Hall of Fame. He's not being voted in, but there's that council or whatever the hell it is of elitists in baseball that say, okay, you're in.
It's a council of old guys that vote in less old guys.
Yes. So Bud Selig is being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Well, why aren't we looking at Bud Selig as the guy who allowed all of this to happen, the guy that wouldn't take on the Players Association because he was – you know, they were too strong, or he didn't want to take them on because of of stoppages and things like that. And you know, people can look at Bud Selig and the way that he handled that as, you know, letting it happen. He's the one who let the steroids stay in the game. They were obviously down when McGuire and Sosa were hitting bombs. Everybody chicks digged the long ball, and it brought baseball back into the forefront. And Selig loved it, and he was revered for it. And now we know why, because he was letting these steroids play in the game, and now he's getting inducted to the Hall of Fame. So why isn't there also a standard for him by allowing these things?
Because money. He grew the game. The game grew tenfold when he was the commissioner, and it is now bigger than it's ever been. So
okay, I could say the same thing about Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens.
Oh, they also grew the game. With you. But the answer for Bud Selig is money. He was good. As far as the bottom line of the league goes, he was good for the game. So he was thought of as a good commissioner.
But the thing with him is, like you were saying, the elitists, the guys who are all in arms together, he's on that crew. I mean, he was an owner. Is he still the owner of the
no,
Brewers?
No, no.
He was the owner of the Brewers.
Yeah, he had to give it up when he was.
He's in that fraternity. I mean, he's with these guys. He's one of them. So they look the other way when that stuff happens. The players are the players. They're not on the side of the owners. They're not on the side of the baseball elitist guys. It's a different level of baseball. You know what I mean? Like it's the guy above the guy, whoever that guy is. I mean, there's like a totem pole of baseball, and Selig is in the owners.
Poor Jorge Posada's only got 5%.
You need 5 to stay on, right?
Oh, I don't even know what you need. I thought you needed 15.
I think you need 5 to stay on.
So that's like 2 votes.
Yeah, but he's trending at less than 5. So
less than five,
actually on pace to not make it right now, not to stay on the ballot.
Yeah, he's trending at 4.4%. Only received 7 votes. And listen, Posada's not a Hall of Famer. Neither of us can argue.
No, he's not a Hall of Famer.
But he was – we're biased. There's no way to talk about Posada and not be biased as a Yankees fan. But he was one
He's a
of,
Yankee Hall of Famer.
Yes, 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 absolutely. He was one of the 3 best catchers of the 2000s. 2000 to 2010, one of the 3 best catchers in baseball.
Okay, yeah. Not looking at the names. I mean, it's probably close, if not right there. The thing about the Baseball Hall of Fame, too, the other insane thing about this, you're looking at Posada, who's at 5%. Some of these guys who are voting, I've been listening to, again, more of this stuff. They were talking about, you know, giving a vote, one of the 10 votes to Posada just to keep him on the ballot.
Yeah, it's the politics and, shit that we talked
about.
Yeah,
it's their strategy. They're working their strategy in the way that they vote.
So stupid.
Just to keep a guy on the ballot where, well, then you're not using that other vote for a guy who deserves the Hall of Fame. It's ridiculous the way that they do these things. And I forget who it was talking about this, but he's you know, outright saying, yes, I'm going to use my vote for Posada to keep him on the ballot. Well, then who's the guy you're leaving off that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Because there's somebody there that you're leaving off.
Well, I'm not going to vote for Pudge Rodriguez because I know the rest of the voters will, so he's going to get in anyway. And it's like, well then, what are we really doing here? This is like a popularity contest in high school at this point.
It's not even just a popularity contest, but it's politics in who's popular today, because maybe they'll be more popular next year, and I think this guy has enough votes, but maybe he doesn't. It's ridiculous. It's so stupid.
I need a 30 for 30 on the inner politics of the baseball writers voting for the Hall of Fame.
I really do believe that once this goes public, everybody's votes, a lot of things are going to change, because I think that takes a lot more to put your vote out there, put your name behind it, and say, this is the reason I did it. People are going to think twice about what they do when they know damn well that everybody, you know, everybody in the media, everybody, all the fans know exactly who they are picking and what they're doing, because they're going to have to explain it. And when they explain it, they can't sound ridiculous. And if they do, they got to live up to that, and they got to deal with that. I think it's going to change a lot of things. I think it's going to change the way that people vote.
And you and I will continue to mock or not mock all the writers for how they go about voting. It's one of my favorite pastimes.
It's pretty fun to do.
All right. That is it for us this week. Any last words before we get out of here?
Yeah, hopefully the Yankees will do something so we have some new stuff to talk about. That'd be nice.
Nah, this is good. Let's just see how long. It's like Kramer driving the car on empty. Let's just see how
going,
long.
Just keep going, baby. Just keep going.
Let's see how long we can drive this thing with nothing going on.
I feel like last year, even though we didn't sign any free agents, they spaced out
they
the
traded
things.
For Chapman and Starlin Castro. That gave us like a month worth of content.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, we're chugging along. I think we're doing the best we can with what we're given.
Yeah, send us some mailbags, guys. Let's you know, what do you want to hear about? Otherwise, we're gonna start breaking down positions. We're gonna start getting into the inner workings of this team.
Hey, I could do 50 minutes just on how bad Chase Headley is.
Yeah, I know you could. I don't know if I could listen to that though. You could. That could be a solo show.
All right, Happy New Year, everybody, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.